90% of employees are using AI today, whether their employers are paying for it or not.
AI is really, you know, computers performing tasks.
I mean, it only took us about a day to think that we're all losing our jobs. But it was like, it was an incredible experience.
And it feels like magic, right?
Yeah, it does.
It feels like magic. And I think it's important to know that AI isn't thinking.
They think they can increase their revenue by 75% without increasing headcount. Mm.
Yeah, is this going to impact jobs, right? I think there's a real concern there.
Welcome to the Rennie Podcast. I'm Ryan Berlin, Rennie's head economist and vice president of intelligence. And we're recording this episode from our office in Whistler, which we don't do for just any episode. Today, we're not going to talk about real estate trends and the housing market per se, but instead about a topic that has perhaps superseded real estate in the consciousness of British Columbians. And I'm not talking about the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm talking about artificial intelligence. So I want to share a few data points before we get started here. 90% of employees are using AI today, whether their employers are paying for it or not. 82% of consumers, people who are in the market for housing, either selling or buying, are using it to access real estate data and understand the market better. However, a separate study by MIT revealed that there's a 95% failure rate for enterprise AI solutions. So in other words, 95% of so-called Gen AI pilots that companies have funded and tried to implement have flopped. They haven't worked. So we have this ubiquity of usage, but a lack of transformative impact, which is why some people look at AI and ask the question, are we in a bubble? So we'll touch on that episode. We're also going to talk about, from the top, what AI actually is, how it's showing up in real estate, how consumers are using it, and what it means for the real estate industry. I obviously cannot do this alone. This is outside of my area of expertise. So with me today is a good friend, somebody that I've worked with for the past 10 years. Daryl Koopmans, who is the Vice President of Technology at Rennie, the so-called AI czar. He wants us to call him czar around the office. I just call him DK. So DK, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get started, why don't you tell our listeners and our viewers what you do at Rennie, how you spend your time, where you make an impact?
Yeah, I've been at Rennie for 8 years. Our division supports all things technology throughout the business. It's from all the corporate IT support, network infrastructure at all our locations, hardware and software procurement. We deal with Rennie.com, our website, which is a custom developed platform. We also develop apps for our realtors through a platform called RDesk that we created. And we support the R-Catalyst sales system as well, which is for the whole developer side of the business, for all the way from lead to contract. We track our purchasers through there, and as well as our data architecture, which supports your division mm-hmm. quite heavily, which consists of a data lake, about 70 to 75 data pipelines that we feed into the system that we're monitoring daily and making sure there's some solid uptime there. And of course, over the past year, really looking at AI, how it impacts our industry, our business, and how we infuse that into our workload.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, what you guys do is absolutely critical to the intelligence function at Rennie, and I appreciate you guys every day. So let's turn to the topic of AI more fulsomely here. And I want to start with what seems like a very basic question, probably one that doesn't need to be asked, but I want to ask it, and I'll get to it in a moment. And I guess I just want to step back for a minute and say that, like, I don't know how many people I speak for when I say this. For me, my experience, my conscious experience in interfacing with AI, if you will, I feel like has a start date. Like, it began in December of 2022. We were in the office and a colleague called me over to his desk and a few other people and said, hey, look at this, and pulled up something called ChatGPT and, you know, asked it to write something silly, like something totally asinine, like, a haiku about a Pokemon character making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Like, I can't remember, but it was something along those lines. It had no real value, but it was amazing.
It was amazing.
it was like, wow, how did that do that? And the thing is, now that seems so just par for the course. Like, yeah, of course you can create that. But at that time, like prior to that moment, in my mind, you couldn't do that. And then he went over to this DALL-E app, an image generator, and created in a Van Gogh style painting, this image of like the Super Mario Brothers plowing a field, right? So again, no utility here, just more eye-opening going, holy smokes. I mean, it only took us about a day to think that we were all losing our jobs, but it was like, it was an incredible experience. Then again, it feels like AI has just been there in the background for a long time, generating those Netflix recommendations, supporting dynamic pricing for flights and concert tickets and sporting events, and also powering those chatbots that you see on websites. I don't know if that's AI, but my guess is that it's been in play for some time. So I guess in a moment, I'd love for you to talk a bit about sort of the evolution of AI, like how we got to this point. But just to start, to go to that simple question that I alluded to earlier, what is AI succinctly?
For sure, succinctly. You're absolutely right, Ryan. AI has been around us for some time, definitely in things like Netflix recommendations, Google Maps, like routing you to a different road because it knows that there's traffic up ahead. And really, you know, AI is this big broad bucket. And if you think about it as the world, and then you have a continent and a country and a city or a state, this kind of nesting scenario where you have all these different layers of AI inside. So, you know, really since the 50s is probably like the most common referred to as when AI started.
The 50s, so like 70 some hundred years ago.
Yeah, and you have Arthur Samuel, 1952, he's creating a program to learn how to play checkers. The founder of IBM, Thomas J. Watson Sr. at the time, had also said that based on the demonstration that he saw from Arthur of this program, that his stock price was going to jump 15 points. And it did. And so these things have been there in existence for quite some time. And if you go on Wikipedia, you can see, you know, there's a timeline of AI, right? And there was a AI winter at one point, and you know, where there's no innovation happening. Now, to your point, in December, it really opened everyone's eyes to, you know, what's possible. And it also opened everyone's eyes to, oh, actually, this stuff has been around us in some way, shape, or form. AI is really, you know, computers performing tasks that are typically done by humans. Things like understanding language, recognizing images, making decisions, and now generating content through things like ChatGPT, Gemini, generative AI.
And that seems like the new, I mean, that's what's really sort of brought it front and center, because now individual users can access tools that are leveraging generative AI. So they're creating something out of nothing, seemingly.
Exactly.
And before we didn't have that capability at the like individual level.
And it feels like magic, right?
Yeah, it does.
It feels like magic. And I think it's important to know that AI isn't thinking.
Right.
It's really recognizing patterns in the data that it's trained on, right? So if you think about these mass models like ChatGPT or Gemini, they're looking at large, vast amounts of data, whether that's text, images from the internet, whatever it may be, and then they're able to recognize patterns. And when a user asks for something, magically, it's able to produce that relatively well, right?
And so what you described there, that would be like an example of machine learning.
For sure. Machine learning, AI systems learning from patterns and data, right? And there's a few nuances to that. And there's different ways that a machine could learn. There's supervised learning where you're just giving it the answer key. You're telling it.
So a human is.
Yes.
Like a human
is saying, here's your answer key. It's either spam or not spam, right? And it's able to categorize the data that way. Unsupervised learning is where you just give it all the data and let it figure it out.
How does it figure it out if it doesn't have something to lean on, like an answer key to know that? Is it more that it just categorizes and then after the fact,
exactly,
a human says, yeah, you got it right here?
It's looking for groupings, right, in the data, right? It doesn't necessarily know what it means exactly, right? But it's giving the groupings, and you're able to define what those groupings mean at a deeper level later. There's also reinforcement learning, and you'll see this in ChatGPT as well, where you can like give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down if you'd like that response or not. So it's the user is giving feedback to the system of, yes, you did a good job here, or no, you did not do a good job here. And it might prompt you as well to say, like, what should be different, right? Next time I give you this response. And so you're helping the system learn along with the user feedback.
And I think that's something that it took me a while to get my head around, was that I thought of AI as sort of this like independent technology detached from everything else that just sort of created and almost like, in air quotes, thought and made predictions. But ultimately, it requires a lot of manual input and assessments of what it's doing.
For sure. It still needs data scientists. It still needs machine learning experts to understand the data, the model. I think that's one of the biggest pitfalls, is a company that does not have their data organized in a way that can be read by a machine, or there's gaps in their data or errors, you're not going to see very good results when you try and implement AI. That's where a lot of these companies come into place.
Right.
Yes, they want to help you build an AI solution, but they really want to work with you to get your data strategy set and organized. And thankfully, we have that pretty well dialed at Renny.
So we talked about AI as a concept. Machine learning is more of a method for achieving artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
Like a subset?
Exactly. And I think, you know, there's others like deep learning, right? Mm-hmm. Deep learning is where you have, it's almost trying to imitate a human brain. Neurons talking to each other. So if you think about it, has these layers of neurons along the way. Take image recognition, for example, right? So you give a system an image of a cat or a dog. It's looking for first layer, first neuron. It's going through and looking at the edges, right? And what is the outline doing, okay? Like, is it a tail is protruding over here, right? It's recognizing different things in its overall shape. Then you start to like dive into things like the next layer might be colors, right? So what colors represent are shown in this image. And then more like facial features or shapes of, you know, of the animal itself, ears, eyes, where those things start to go. And then ultimately at the last layer, it's merging them all together. And it's looking for, now it has all this information about how this image is broken down. And I can safely assume that this is a cat, right?
Right.
Or this is a dog or whatever. And you're also, again, you might be feeding that model with, here's like 3,000 pictures of cats. Here's 3,000 pictures of dogs. And it's learning based off of all those shapes and neurons of what it's doing exactly.
Right. And it's so good now, it can differentiate between dogs and pan au chocolat as well.
Yes.
Do we know that meme? So again, my knowledge of AI is not very deep. It's very surface level, but I'm aware there's different types of AI. There's generative AI, mm-hmm. which is, again, how it seems like a lot of people, that is their experience, their hands-on experience with it through like these like ChatGPTs and Geminis. But then there's also discriminative AI, which is used to predict outcomes. So maybe you can talk a bit about those and, you know, where we are today with those technologies.
Yeah, for sure. We'll start with the discriminative side. I mean, this is, again, stuff that has been around for quite some time. It is really the data learning from patterns and understanding what is in that data set. And as new data is coming in, it's saying, most likely I can categorize this as this, right? It's really probability based. So if you think about things like market forecasting, you know, we can look at the history of where market rates are at, where employment rates are at, where home sale prices are at, right? And we can start to layer in these different data sets to really help predict, what we would expect maybe a home to sell. And, you know, groups like Zillow have done that, you know, things like Zestimates, exist. So there's a lot of like AVM tools out there,
right,
and whatnot. And now what we're seeing is this generative AI side, which is really, you know, where the boom is happening, and it's really an arms race of these different companies deploying better model and one that's more accurate or produces images faster or gives you a deeper research report, maybe that you couldn't get from a different model. Some of the models code better than others. So there's a lot of different use cases. I myself use 3 or 4 different Gen AI tools for different reasons and purposes. But yeah, really it's created this new opportunity for people to learn, to try new things. My son started a chef bot. He wanted to learn how to cook short ribs. And so he created a chef bot that speaks Gen Alpha language and gives him all the recipes and the ingredients list. And he just has to input what he has. And he spent 3 hours in the kitchen making ribs for the family. So, for a 12-year-old to have, access to some of these things, it's really kind of changing the world daily.
Yeah, it reminds me of when we got the internet and all of a sudden you had information that was accessible, not through like Encyclopedia Britannica or the Microsoft Encarta CDs, but it was just a much more vast database that existed and you could tap it to see what was out there. And this is now seeing our kids sort of experience it in the same way. They can ask questions of it like they would ask an expert in whatever it is that they're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
And there you go. They can make meals that are tailored to dietary needs and calorie counts and all that stuff. So all that's like really interesting and fascinating. And you can see why, everybody is, seemingly all in on this technology. Let's bring it to real estate though. You talked a little bit about, how it does show up in real estate, but there's a multitude of ways. So maybe you can give some examples of how companies are using it and also how we're using it at Rennie.
Yeah, I think there's multiple ways. I think a lot of the companies right now are really looking internally. So how, from an operational efficiency standpoint, can I enable my staff to work on higher value task items versus lower task things like sending emails and booking things in the calendar? So definitely from an internal perspective, there's a lot of automation and capability there. We're seeing it in the building industry from like a climate risk assessment and forecasting that way, from HVAC improvements based with sensors in the wall and technology leveraged there to make more energy efficient homes as well. So a lot of interesting stuff on that side. From the real estate industry at large, things like AVM tools.
Which is automatic valuation model.
Yeah, that's the one, automatic valuation model. So understanding what a home could be priced at and valued at and what it could potentially sell for. And we've seen that again through Zillow estimates and other groups have come up with their own models as well outside of that. Things like home staging. So, realtors are able to use these generative tools to drop in their listing and have it stage the home. So if there's no furniture in the home, they can choose a theme that they like. If they want a coastal theme, fill all 40 photos with furniture and paintings on the wall and to match that style. So things like that have really allowed individuals, realtors, to kind of take things into their own hands at a cost that is $20 per month versus paying a professional company to stage a home for them.
So at Rennie, how do we look at the deployment of AI? Like, what are the considerations that we're making in applying that technology to what we do?
We're really looking at this in 3 kind of key buckets. Revenue generation. So how do we connect our consumers with our realtors quicker or our consumers with real estate quicker? So really an opportunity for lead generation and revenue generation there. Second bucket is on operational efficiency, which I mentioned. So what is that agent that's able to sit beside each staff member and give them an hour of their time back every day? How are we able to produce more content? Or every time we add a new region, let's say, and we ingest a whole bunch of new data, are we able to analyze that data quicker, faster to get a report out to our clients? Third bucket is really on spend. So, we spend quite a significant amount on software at Rennie. And so how do we leverage AI to really allow these systems, A, to talk to each other, to maximize their value in the background through different connections and AI agents? Or we might not need 3 or 4 of the pieces of software anymore because we're able to solve it with a ChatGPT, a Gemini integration, or what have you.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talk about operational efficiency, and I think that sends chills down some people's spines. And we're hearing, there's actually a lot in the news right now about some of the larger tech companies, particularly in the US, that are looking at, there's some internal documents that were leaked from Amazon, mm-hmm. where they think they, you know, over the next, like, I think it's, you know, 5 to 6 years, they think they can increase their revenue by 75% without increasing headcount. Mm. And some of those other big five tech firms are now slashing jobs for a whole bunch of reasons. I mean, I think some of it had to do with the splurge on hiring that occurred in 2021 and 2022. Mm. But certainly AI is starting to play a role here where, as you said, for some of these like lower value or repetitive tasks, at least, you know, the technology can do as good a job or better than perhaps humans. The way I look at it for myself, like within intelligence, is we're not using AI to reduce headcount. We're using it to increase our capacity, like our ability to work through large data sets, to forecast, you know, home sales, not just for one region, but for all markets and for sub-markets, and to be able to produce more content than we otherwise would have. So, you know, I think when I look forward, one thing that I've come across is more people who are, you know, in recent months than ever before, that are producing, using this deep research function in ChatGPT or whatever it's called with the other bots, and producing these so-called market reports, right? Mm-hmm. So like, tell me what's happening in Vancouver's housing market, yeah. and economy. Yeah. And it's impressive. Like, it is. I mean, you give it 5 to 10 minutes and it produces this, you know, like a research paper. The one issue I have is that when I read through those types of reports, there's a lack of transparency, a lack of understanding of what the context is for some of the data points or where the data come from. Mm. I mean, there's citations, but you don't really know what it's speaking to. Mm. And you don't always know what's been excluded and why. And I think when it comes to modeling, it's very tempting to just defer to AI. Like in my world, it would be so easy to easy in a sense to just turn things over to the technology and say, start forecasting everything that we talk about for every market we're in. And let's start pushing that out to our clients and to, you know, consumers and that kind of thing. But that's black box modeling, right? And there's not a ton of utility in forecasting the what's if you don't know the why's. And I've spent my career, when I am forecasting or doing any analysis, doing it in a way that is as transparent as it can be, so that, and where I know the inner workings. Right. Because when I stand in front of a client and I say, hey, you know, over the next couple of years, we expect that, you know, rental rates, for example, are going to decline. And then we think they'll start rebounding in year three and beyond. Yeah. Well, the very first question they ask is why, right? So it's great to be able to have the ability to forecast and to make that initial statement, but you kind of get stuck then when someone asks you why and you don't understand what the inputs are or how they're being used.
Yeah.
So to me, this goes back to this idea of having tacit knowledge around or subject matter expertise and combining that with AI, and that being where the value is, as opposed to just using the technology and it replacing the knowledge that people possess.
Yeah. So you touched on a few things there. So I want to go back to the employment remarks you made just around, is this going to impact jobs, right? I think there's a real concern there. Like it's valid, you know, from what we've seen in our ability to use it in coding and our developer able to produce around 10 weeks of development time in a week and a half of prompting and guidance. Now, to your point, this thing was going off the rails and it was all over the map and started introducing new issues or new things like that. You still need that tacit knowledge to really review the code, understand what's going on, prompt it the right way, right? Give it the right directions and guardrails so that it's not going off the rails. But in groups where you have relatively small teams, you know, you're able to actually achieve like quite a significant amount of output. But you have to be cautious of those hallucinations, right? So is this deep research report I'm getting on the Vancouver market actually valid, right? Do the numbers line up? Does it make sense? Because it is pulling from 80 plus different sources. And I think, you know, the unique thing that we're able to do at Rennie, because we have our whole data architecture, is that we can lock it to just that framework, right? It doesn't need to pull in outside sources. We're feeding it the exact same sources that we're producing the Rainy Review or the pre-sale snapshots and things like that. We're just giving that to the AI, right? And so the hallucination that it can produce is a lot more guardrailed. Now, it still needs your knowledge, still needs your team to go through it all. Are we comfortable putting this report out? But it's now enabled you to get you 80% of the way there in a couple hours versus maybe 3 weeks of effort to create that report.
Absolutely. And that's where I can see it, you know, in the future, reducing the need to expand workforces. I think that's where I see, in a broad sense, a lot of the impact. And my concerns in the short term are that there are disruptions. And, you know, long term, I think the economy and society, our education system, everything will adjust. You know, we went from an agrarian society into the Industrial Revolution. Computers were invented. We have the PC revolution, the internet, and now AI. Like, through all of those changes, there were disruptions along the way, but our ability to produce and consume grew. The economy grew. More and more people were employed. People were paid more over time or earned more. And so this is just another evolution. There's a speed to this that we haven't seen.
Yeah.
A speed of transformation that we haven't seen in the past.
It's a hockey stick curve, right? The technology is advancing. The compute power is advancing like so fast and able to support all this stuff as well, which has all its knock-on effects, right? Of environmental impact, ethical issues, right? These are all probably very similar discussions that they were having when the internet was born, right? All these things are real life conversations that need to be had. Also, you mentioned, you know, this notion of a black box. 100% agree. There's always the why, right? Why are we getting this number? Why are you saying what you're saying? You know, my notion to our company and to our advisor base as well is be curious, right? We actually don't know what we're going to get if we don't actually try it, right? So it might be a black box. It might be something that we don't need to publish, you know, in the public or consumer eye. But if we don't know what its capability is or its flexibility or, yeah, understanding of our systems, what could talk to what, there's a real opportunity there to just be curious and to just try things because you actually don't really know what you're going to get.
Yeah, I think that's a great piece of advice. And maybe just to close off, your thoughts on in the real estate sector itself. You know, we talked about AI, you know, threatening some jobs. If we talk about realtors, for example, here's a direct question. Can AI take the place of realtors?
No.
Why not?
I'll go back to, you mentioned tacit knowledge, you know, we'll go back to that. I think ultimately AI will take us to a point, right? It'll take us to maybe a really good spot where we've learned something new, something was gained by us, right? I'll use an example of, there's a commercial piece of property in Squamish that I was kind of interested in, and it was close to my house, and I know nothing about commercial real estate, even though I've been in this industry for 23 years. Outside of, there's commercial agents that work within that space, you know, all of the net rates and things like that. I have a high level understanding. So I was curious, well, can I, you know, afford the carrying costs of this building, right? But I don't really know all the ins and outs of how to calculate that. So I used AI and had a discussion with it around this property. I gave it the feature sheet. I uploaded my home as well, you know, so it could calculate kind of the whole value of the whole property because it was right behind my house. And it got me like quite a ways like along. But at the end of it, I was kind of stuck. I was like, well, I don't know how much rent this place is generating. I don't know anything about this building, like the ins and outs of it. I don't know how to purchase this building. I can't write the contract myself. I don't have that skill or capability. So I think it'll always bring us to a point where ultimately we'll still need that expertise, right? I still need, again, even though I'm reading your reports, right, about real estate in Squamish, I don't know in 5 months' time, like, is this going to be a good investment for me, right? ChatGPT is not going to be able to tell me that because all it's doing is grabbing information that exists already and giving me an answer that I want to hear. And so at the end of the day, you know, we still need that professional human relationship, right? And And I still need that expertise. And I'm not going to go back to school and learn how to, you know, be a commercial realtor just so I can purchase this one property. But I think, again, that's where there's opportunity for our realtors as well to understand that, you know, consumers, you mentioned that stat earlier, 82% of consumers are using AI already to find housing information. How can our realtors, advisors be well-equipped to have that conversation with their client, right? Well, this is what AI is doing. Right, just FYI, this is what it's doing. It's looking at past information. It doesn't know the heartbeat of the community. It doesn't know who bought that property down the street is now going to buy, you know, the next three over so they can build a condo. You know, there's a lot of that just knowledge and relationship that you're never going to garner from an AI system.
Well, and also there's just a trust that comes with human interaction that doesn't exist between humans and technology. I don't know if we'll ever get there. And when you talk about realtors, they do more than just, you know, get the most value for a property you're selling or try to get a property for the best price. There's so much more that goes into transactions about closing timelines and conditions of sale, where I know personally from my experience, working with a human who was able to work through our needs was absolutely invaluable. It wasn't just about, you know, spitting out or landing on a value that worked for everyone. There's a lot more to every transaction.
And it's that last mile, right? It's that last mile problem. But that last mile can actually take a really long time, right? Yeah, which needs relationship, which needs guidance, which needs your expertise. And to finish, you know, this commercial notion that I went through, I wound up contacting Gina Bellinger, a Squamish realtor, and just said, hey, I need to know more about this property. Does it make sense? What are the rental rates? And she was able to get me that info super quick. And so it actually created that connection, right? If I, you know, only had Google, let's say, in the past, I might have only just stopped there and like, you know what? Too complex, too much information. I'm not going to dive into this commercial thing. I don't really get it. Generative AI has opened up some of those doors of new learning, new information to at least then, you know, cause me to go reach out to my realtor and find out, is this even feasible, right?
Absolutely.
Does this make sense?
All right. So to wrap up, there we've talked about a lot here. It's still like for me, it's this world of AI is like overwhelming, especially the speed at which things are evolving. It's hard to keep up. But if you had to say, like for businesses, whether it's in real estate or outside of it, what is one thing that they can do or need to do to realize the potential of AI?
Yeah, great question. I think it's hard to even predict what's next. And I think for businesses today, the key focus is really their data strategy. If you think about all these systems, tools, chatbots, they're all reading your data, right? And so if your data is misaligned, has gaps or errors in it, you know, your actual output, as we mentioned earlier, is not going to be great. You're going to have a lot of difficulty with it. So I do think data is really key in AI. It's also an opportunity for businesses to review that data, right? And to really assess it, ensure it's the right data that they're supposed to have, personal identifying information, things like that. It's a good exercise for businesses to go through. And then layer on the AI on top of that, right? Bring in some expertise, either in-house or outsource. We found that has gone a long way with groups that we've talked to where our data strategy and our architecture is already set. As we're well ahead of where most companies sit today.
Obviously, thanks in no small part to the expertise you brought to Rennie on the AI front. Thank you for the expertise that you brought to this conversation. Couldn't have done it without you, Czar. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. A lot of fun.
For everybody who is watching on YouTube, if you have any questions about anything we discussed today or about real estate or AI in real estate, put your questions in the comments and we'll get back to you. If you're listening to us and not watching, head over to YouTube and do the same thing.
Thank you for joining us on the Rennie podcast. If you'd like to learn more or to subscribe to intelligence updates, go to rennie.com/intelligence.